Well, in Ecclesiastes chapter 10, we're starting towards the conclusion of this book, and it really is trying to tie some ends here, as we're seeing there is a limit to what wisdom itself can accomplish. There is a way in which you can overly pursue righteousness with the expectation you can control your life. And so now it's trying to bring this forward, though, to say, but if you are a fool, you will find that your life will go worse. So don't think that every now and then, it's almost trying to be its own rebuttal here. Don't think that every now and then you should dip your toe in the land of folly or foolishness, because, you know, life is random and who knows and who cares. So it's trying to have the whole conversation, and that's just where we're at in the book. There's only three chapters left, 10, 11, 12. Today we're just going to focus on chapter 10. If we get to 11, great, but I think 11 and 12 are best paired together, and it looks like we'll finish the book on the last week of May, the May 28th, where we're going to get to read something very interesting. And I want us to kind of look forward to it. So before we read chapter 10, would you turn over to me with to chapter 12 and verse 9? I just want us to see this real quick, where we're headed. Because this whole time, we have been listening to the quote-unquote preacher or teacher. And now we're told about the author. This is very interesting. As if to say, the voice we've been listening to is not the author, but the teacher, preacher. And so in verse 9, we're told, in addition to the teacher being a wise man, he constantly taught the people knowledge. He weighed, explored, and arranged many proverbs. Once again, verse 10, the teacher sought to find delightful sayings and write words of truth accurately. The sayings of the wise are like cattle prods. A description of this whole book, the book of Proverbs, what have you. And those from masters of collections are like firmly embedded nails, as in keeping you to the ground. The sayings are given by one shepherd. Can I get a different translation on that very last line of verse 11?
All right, well-driven nails are given by one shepherd.
Well-driven nails. Okay. Yeah, so we've got this. All of these sayings are from one shepherd. If you have something that is truly wisdom, it has to be from God. The author's final words, verse 12, but beyond these, my son, be warned, there is no end to the making of many books, and much study wearies the body. When all has been heard, the conclusion of the matter is this: fear God and keep his commands, because this is for all humanity. I'm going to stop right there. We'll come back to that in a couple weeks. But just as a reminder here, when we're in chapter 10, we're hearing from one speaker, the teacher, the preacher, and he is trying to say what it has been like to pursue enjoyment and pursue delight, find that it's very hard to hold on to, that oftentimes you have to choose it. And that there is a way that you can overdo it in pursuing righteousness, thinking that, well, I'm supposed to get joy because I'm walking in wisdom. There's something missing here. Let's go ahead and read chapter 10. Can I get somebody's help to read verse 1 and 2, 3 and 4, and then if someone else would just read 5, 6, and 7.
Outweighs wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart goes to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. Even when the fool walks along the road, his heart lacks sense, and he shows everyone he is a fool. If the ruler's anger rises against you, don't leave your place, for calmness puts great offenses to rest.
Yeah. And if someone else could read 5, 6, and 7.
There is an evil I have seen under the sun, as an error proceeding from the ruler. Ali has sat in great dignity, while the rich sit in a lonely place. I have seen servants on horses, while princes walk on the ground like servants.
Yeah. we're talking about kings again, and we're talking about what makes a good king. But it starts out here with just this little bit of foolishness. And I think the King James might even refer to this perfume as something bought from an apothecary. Am I remembering that right? We don't have any King James readers today. Am I? Or maybe I'm just...
What?
I'm sorry.
She is.
Do you have the word apothecary in the first verse? Sorry. Very strange word.
Yeah, I had to look it up.
Uh-huh. Well, it makes... It makes me think that word might have been more common during the 1500s, 1600s, my bad. Yeah, just as a place you would actually go. You think about the guys with the really long noses, those medics. That's what that word brings to mind. I just thought it was interesting. Like these doctors who are like trying to keep their nose out of things. An apothecary is a really, really interesting word. But basically, somebody who makes things that smell good.
And stuff in the apothecary.
Oh, yeah. Nowadays, if you say the word apothecary, you'll get a very different group of people that say, ooh, I want to find out more, who are vaguely spiritual. Nothing like that's going on here. The focus here is actually more so on these dead flies that have found their way into somebody's perfume. Yeah. And all it's saying is that you have one problem, one little thing in here, in this whole jar, and it ruins the whole batch. So you have wisdom and honor all of your life, and then you make one single foolish mistake, and the thing that people remember you for is the foolish thing that you said or that you did, or even just a foolish attitude that you made very public, which kind of gets to the next part here. A wise person's heart goes to the right, a fool's heart to the left. Basically saying there's no such thing as a little sprinkle of foolishness. You're getting the whole thing. You're going to the right or you're going to the left. And then it takes that idea one step further in verse 3. Even when the fool walks along the road, his heart lacks sense. Can I hear another translation? His heart lacks sense.
He lacks wisdom.
He lacks wisdom. Anything else?
His common sense and judgment fail him.
Yeah. This is meant to bring up a picture of somebody who knows where they're trying to go. So here's something interesting maybe you don't think about when you think of foolish people. They have goals, and they might even be great goals. Yes, please, that's exactly what I want you to do with your life. Spend it wisely and get that whatever it is, right? Family, career, friends who are loving and honest and true. But it's as if the second that they set out for this destination, a worthwhile cause, because they're foolish, they take the first step and they're like, where was I going again?
It's the true definition of today's politics, you know. I mean,
oh, sure.
That, you know, and I'm invited Annie here to argue that point, but you know, I've always used that verse all my life, you know. Mm. Which way you're leaning? It says right here in the Bible.
That's right.
I'll argue that point.
Oh man. Yeah. Oh goodness. And
it talks about it demonstrates to everybody that he's a fool.
Uh-huh.
How many of these dumb Democrats are out there that when they open their mouth, filth comes out. That's all they can say.
Yeah.
It's just one cuss word after another.
I will say this. Most politicians are putting their foot in their mouths. They could learn something from these celebrities who go to red carpet events and only say things that are beautiful and pretty. It doesn't mean they said anything, but at least they didn't say something stupid, you know?
They act like that it's, well, they're their crowd is going to love that they can talk in that way.
Yeah, well, and...
I mean, this one woman even stood up and she's like, I don't normally cuss, but...
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. And it's the same word. They all have to say the same thing.
Every day.
Yeah, well, and so here's the hard part is to think about how it sounds from those politically on the right to the ears of somebody on the left. And I'm not talking about a politician. I'm just talking about someone who's a Gen Z social activist, and therefore automatically we don't like whoever's on the right speak. Like, period. I don't like them because they hold these values: abortion, homosexuality are sinful. That's a conservative viewpoint. So therefore, all conservatives are evil. And when you chat your moralistic values, they don't even see the Bible. All they hear is mumbo jumbo. You're saying what you think we want to hear. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it's they're conditioned to do that.
Oh yeah,
it's just all conditioned. It's just like during the election, they said anyone displaying an American flag is automatically a Republican. Automatically. So if you were down in South Carolina during the hurricane, you got passed up if you had an American flag or a Trump sign. You know, I mean, it's conditioning.
It was weird conditioning.
Yeah, and so it's a shame what the media has done. The media has always been the enemy.
Hmm. All right. Well, let's talk about those who are in charge for a second.
And it goes right along with the verse. You know?
Yeah. So it shows everyone he's a fool. The second you try and pursue this goal, and you have no idea what you're doing. It's kind of like me repairing appliances in my house. Verse 4, though, if the ruler's anger rises against you, don't leave your post, for calmness puts great offenses to rest. This is interesting, because the king, whoever, maybe it's just your boss, it's the ruler, they single you out, maybe chew you up one side and down the other, and then you don't react. There's wisdom in that. How does that make sense? Like, you don't listen to what they just said. Can you think of a situation like this where someone has lost their mind on you and somehow it's now your responsibility to calm the person in charge down?
It's quite often the case.
Yeah. I want you to hold on to this thought because it's going to apply in the next verses. Working in warehouse situations, it's just naturally loud. And so it's almost hilarious the times where manager folks have thought that they're yelling at someone and the person just doesn't even know what's happening to them. It's like, you're always yelling. That's how you just give instructions. Yeah. But it's very interesting here how it becomes the employee's job, in a sense, to say, hey, I'm going to redirect the way that you're acting, and somehow we're going to lower your anger by my response. It's really, really interesting how the responsibility here, you want to talk about politics, right? What is the heightened media state that every single politician wants to be heard? I'm angry. Things are wrong, right? There is something to be said about not responding on either side for this matter. Man, because there are sometimes I hear Republicans talk, I'm like, you just sound dumb. Like, you believe the right things, but the way you're saying it immediately ostracizes people that I love and will never listen to you. Like, let alone vote for, like, I don't care about the vote part. Like, I care, like, I want to have a conversation, and, like, my family members won't have conversations with me because of my stance on homosexuality, like, or boys are boys and girls are girls. What's the Archie Bunker thing? Men were men and girls, and, yeah, no, there you go. Okay.
That's been banned.
Yeah, yeah. They skipped that part of the theme song now. Okay. Oh, man. I want to say this is incredibly poignant because the rulers in verse 5, 6, and 7, and this is another repeated line that's trying to get your attention, saying, there is an evil I have seen under the sun. We all have that kind of instilled in us. Hopefully this is a conditioning of the book of Ecclesiastes. Your ears perk up whenever you read that phrase, or your eyes get wide. And it says that it's in the presence of the ruler. So what's the error in verse 6 and 7, this problem coming from those in charge?
Louder is better.
Yeah. Oh man, you're being politically correct. We're trying to avoid being politically correct. So verse 6 talks about a fool at the beginning, and then verse 7 talks about a slave. So I don't think necessarily the focus is on foolishness, but rather on status, just who you are. So this is a fun little call as a Israelite reader to say, what is my status? Well, I'm someone who is trying to live as part of the kingdom of God. The second line of verse 6 and the second half of verse 7, you have the rich and you have princes, right? Royalty. Is there a different word besides rich in verse 6 for the second line? Yeah, rich? Okay. I want to give a thought here because it doesn't make sense that if you're rich that you would be in a lowly position. That's not how that works. So what are they rich in? Just being careful here as a reader. Or is it talking about a different kind of wealth? Yeah. Well, so what I want to say the error ultimately comes down to is that these are not positions that these people are in because of their status as a functional human being or as someone who fears God, but rather because the king simply said, you're in charge, you're not. Yeah, appointed positions, exactly. You see that in verse 6 there. The fool is appointed to this great height, this high position in the land. And the author, or the teacher rather, of Ecclesiastes is trying to get you to think about what you're supposed to do when you, maybe as someone pursuing wisdom, someone who says, I'm a royal priesthood of the believers. Maybe you're not an actual prince, but you have a certain status in your life. And yet, you're told to walk on the ground. You're told to stay in that lowly position and stick to your duty. Do as you're told, you know. And then you see somebody else who has no business, no business being in charge of you running the place. I'm sorry, there was a Fox News host who just got appointed to something. I can't stay quiet on that one. There's bad appointments on all sides. What's her name? Is it Perino? What, I don't know her actual name. Yeah, just got appointed to a administrative duty thing in the White. It's annoying.
She's the press secretary for Bush.
Maybe.
I didn't see anything like that. I saw something where that Judge Janine.
Yeah.
Pointed to something.
Yeah.
And she has no qualifications to do anything except talk.
Yeah.
She's an attorney.
They all were attorneys.
Yeah.
Everyone in Washington is an attorney. And I guess it's pretty cheap to get that. You know.
She's pretty smart.
I don't know. She hadn't done anything for years. I mean, I used to be pretty. Yeah,
I'm picking on one. Just to say that it's both sides who are doing this. The emphasis really isn't on the rulers being stupid. It's more saying rulers will always be stupid. They're going to make stupid appointments, and you're like, "What are you doing, you knucklehead? Don't you see all these qualified people here who can actually do something about like, the problems of this world?" It's meant to make you think about once again the vanity of all of this. It's all disappearing. It's all smoke. It's all an illusion. You can't actually solve the problems of the world. And yet you feel the desire to do so. And yet you are the person who can do something about it because you have God's wisdom. And yet the rulers will never recognize you. Or the people that you can easily recognize, they have wisdom. They can actually get the job done. So it really is, in a way, meant to make you think about, I guess, politics. Because that's the land that we live in.
What it boils down to is it boils down to the carnal person that we all are that makes us think we know how to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
and we don't know how to do anything. So it really is a very basic concept that is present in the world everywhere. Not just politics. Not just warehouses. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
And there is a right and a left to everything. So you have people who may not be able to distinguish their right from their left.
Yeah. And I would say that's probably the majority of the people in our society are those who are looking at this and not saying this is right or this is wrong. And I mean that, like, I would say those who are solidly Democratic, solidly Republican, solidly conservative, solidly liberal, they are minorities. I'm talking 15% here, 15% here, and then the majority in the middle saying, I don't know. You talk well, or do you look like? Do you have any bad things that are openly like they're not even?
We live in a society.
Yeah.
Where we live in a country and are in a society where if you're rich, you must be smart.
Yeah.
You had to be smart in order to accumulate the riches, but in many cases, that's not true.
Yeah.
And then it's the majority rules.
Hmm.
Our society says the majority rules. And the majority may not be any smarter than anybody.
Yeah, I think that's why Thomas Paine had to write that book, Common Sense, because there wasn't any. Yeah.
I don't know who wrote that. There's a book called The Death of Common Sense.
Hmm.
It was condensed in an article in the Reader Digest.
There you go.
And so
his last name was Bennett, but I don't remember his first name.
But it was a very well written book, and it was titled The Death of Common Sense, but it made a lot of sense.
Well, let's talk about common sense here for a second. So it does kind of, it seemingly stops the conversation, but we'll see if we can figure out the connection here. Verse 8, the one who digs a pit may fall into it. The one who breaks through a wall may be bitten by a snake. The one who quarries stones may be hurt by them. The one who splits logs may be endangered by them. Verse 10, if the axe is dull and one does not sharpen its edge, then one must exert more strength. However, the advantage of wisdom is that it brings success. Okay, so I want to apply the end of verse 10 here to verse 8 and verse 9. I think that's what we're meant to do. So these two ideas, breaking through a wall or digging a pit. Do we have a different word for pit or something about the intention here? Here's a little bit of Reader's Digest for you. This is meant to be like a criminal trying to trap somebody. When it says dig a pit, it's not talking about for farming. It's saying I'm putting a trap somewhere for someone to fall into. And then that kind of helps you make sense of the words break through a wall. I think there is a different translation here for this one. The second half of verse 8. Break through a wall.
Break it a hedge.
Yeah, a hedge. Okay. So King James there, we think about hedge of protection is probably what comes to mind most clearly.
Mike says a stone wall.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So it's this this idea of some place where there was supposed to be safety and somebody broke into through that safety only to find themselves bitten by a snake. And then it kind of makes the point more emphatic when it talks about more innocuous things, things that aren't criminal. Just my job is I'm a mason worker. I got to collect my stones and broke a rock and it ended up falling on me, or chopped down a tree and here it comes upon me.
What's the purpose of the pit? I mean, it's not a literal pit, but if they're using it as a synonym or whatever. So what's the purpose of a pit other than a well or, I don't know.
So it really is meant to say it's a trap. It's something that you're going to push somebody in. I'll get you out if you give me money. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's almost trying to set the situation up. All right, you want a little bit of foolishness? Let's talk about a little bit of foolishness. You think that you're so clever because you're going to steal from somebody, breaking into their house, or set up a trap for somebody. You can't even keep yourself safe when you're just doing your job as a mason worker or as a lumberjack, you know? How do you think you're going to get away with this as a criminal? scot-free, right? And so the end of verse 10 here, the advantage of wisdom is that it brings success. This is an application of righteousness is what it is. When you're talking about success, we are not talking about, I chopped the tree down and I was able to not make it hurt me. It's talking to criminals for a second. Those who are active criminals, I'm putting out traps for people, I'm breaking into people's homes. And going back to verse 6 and 7, the foolish person who got appointed to a great height, a great promotion, so I don't know, maybe they're second in command of the country, maybe they're just somebody of prominence. In the olden days, they're the ones riding on the horse and somebody else is cleaning up the poop behind them, right? They're the ones leading the parade. Those people, when they try and express their foolishness, what they're going to find is the same thing as verse 3. He shows everyone he is a fool. Everyone's going to see their foolishness. And it's going to happen to you if you are an active criminal or you're a more privatized criminal. You're accepting bribery and whatever that it might be, the kind of corruption you do see in politics or even in the workplace. Gosh, the advantage of wisdom is that it brings success. Unfortunately, I want us to think about here not politics but church for a second. There are people in recent memory, far too recent memory, who since their ministries have ended have been found out to be corrupted, whether that be through sexual sin or through goodness. Taking the money from greed. Gosh,
helicopters.
Yeah, buying private jets and what have you. Yes, the life of luxury. Yeah. Anyway, just things that undermine their ministry, that if they would have had the righteousness that comes from wisdom, they wouldn't have found themselves in, and their life actually would have stood the test of time. Their ministry would have been upheld with honor. And I really think that's what's going on here, and what it's trying to get across. The advantage of wisdom that it brings success is not this idea of your job's going to go better, but rather that the wisdom and honor that you really, really want, the things that you know for a fact will stand the test of time outside of fleeting pleasure or a momentary lapse in judgment. It causes you to take things seriously and to live with wisdom, or else. And here's the or else, verse 11. If the snake bites before it is charmed, then there's no advantage for the charmer. That makes sense.
Yeah. It makes no sense to me because I don't care about snakes or charming them. They only need to be killed.
I like that thinking. You know what? That's downright biblical. We've actually had the idea of biting snakes repeatedly come up, and I think it's on purpose. When you think about the temptation, yes, of Eve and Adam, and then the prophecy given in Genesis 3:15 about the seed of the serpent biting the heel of the one who would crush his head. Talking about Jesus Christ, of course. This is how sin works. You give in to sin, you're going to find yourself bitten by a snake. You want to play with snakes? Guess what? They bite. So here you go. Verse 12. The words from the mouth of a wise person are gracious, but the lips of a fool consume him. The beginning of the words from his mouth is folly, but the end of his speaking is evil madness. So you start out just an idiot, and then you find yourself being a tyrannical dictator, essentially, right? Verse 14, yet the fool multiplies his words. He just doesn't know when to stop, right? So all these things, this whole passage here that we've been talking about, it's trying to wrap up the loose ends of the book and the so what? Why should I pursue wisdom if nothing matters and it's all random? It's all chance. Why do I keep doing this? Why do I keep caring about righteousness? Here's why it matters. Can I get somebody else to join in and read verse 14 and 15 and then 16 and 17? And we'll someone else, if they'll finish out the chapter.
Tell what shall be and what shall be after him, who can tell? The labor of the foolish worth every one of them, because he knoweth not how to go to the city.
Woe to you, O man, whose king is a lad, and whose princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O man, whose king is of nobility, and whose princes eat at the appropriate time for strength and not for drunkenness.
Through the sloth, the roof sinks in, and through the indolence, the house is asleep. Bread is made of laughter, and wine of gladness, gladness the light, and money answers everything. Even in your thoughts, do not curse the king who are in your bedroom, neither curse the rich, for a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature will tell the matter thereof.
Yeah. Sorry, just to point out a couple things real quick. Verse 15, you see this idea, the working of fools, the struggle of fools, it wearies everybody. The very next line, they don't know how to go to the city. It's reminiscent of the entire passage. This is one continuing thought this whole time. Remember, we said in verse 3, the fool walks along the road. His heart lacks sense. He doesn't know where to go. He's showing everybody he doesn't know where to go. Verse 6 and 7, these people don't know how to rule. Verse 8 and 9, they don't know how to do criminal work. and they can't control it even when they finally figure out to do the right kind of work. Verse 11, they're playing with snakes before they're really calmed or taken care of. And verse 12, 13, and 14, they keep talking only to find out they don't know anything. You're getting the picture, right? It really is laying out this very hard, thoughtful case of foolishness and how it's just a little bit of foolishness that makes you a complete and total problem to all of society. You are weighing down. You're the problem that is affecting the world if you choose foolishness. And verse 16, it starts this lament, which is a very specific kind of poetry. This woe, it's the words that you hear in Revelation, right? Or Jesus before his crucifixion in Matthew and Luke. Where he's saying, y'all are going to be destroyed. There's destruction that's coming for you. But here, it's not about God bringing the destruction. Where's it coming from?
Yourself.
Yeah. And I really think when you get to the end of Revelation, that this is what we're meant to understand is happening when there's Babylon the Great. We did this study in Revelation last summer, and if you recall, this is how it ended, was Babylon the Great destroying itself. It was a matter of absolute cannibalization of itself. The kings who came there for the marketplace ended up saying, we want to take that city, and then they burned the city, and then they wept over the city. That's Revelation 17, 18, and 19, just all together, one after the other. And then Jesus comes in and cleans up the mess afterwards when it's already destroyed itself. This is really not a matter of, is my life going to go better? But rather, it's an explanation for the world that you live in. Why is everything seeming to go to pot? It's because we're without God, we're just a bunch of foolish people. We're an 8-year-old wishing for pizza parties and ice cream every day, saying that's what's going to solve the problems of the world. I will say it's a little more realistic in verse 16 and in verse 17 to say it's probably not pizza and ice cream. It's let's have a feast so we can get drunk, right? Verse 17, though, also makes it poignant. Blessed are you, land, when your king is a son of nobles. So he's got fathers whose reputation he's upholding. There's a legacy here that is being upheld. And what it leads to, we see this. What's the reason for feasting?
Strength,
yeah. To do what? Well, they have real work to do. In the land, and they're not going to cloud their mind or their judgment. In verse 18, we see that there's a foolish side of this, but you can also think of the flip side. Instead of laziness causing the roof to cave in, you have people who have eaten for strength to do the work well, to put their hands to the task and make sure this thing's not going to ruin itself. It's not going to leak. And then we have this very strange ending here in verse 19 that I think we need to, we'll probably finish out our time on it, just because of how bizarre it is. A feast is prepared for laughter, wine makes life happy, and money is the answer to everything. What is the deal with this verse? It seemingly comes out of nowhere, doesn't it? And it's almost mocking verse 16 and 17 and 18. The roof caved in, we'll buy a new one, you know? Money's the answer to everything.
It's just what people think is true.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely the opposite of that.
It's irony, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost sarcasm, a little bit of Jesus saying, have you not read, talking to the chief religious leaders who memorize the Bible for a living, you not read the book? It's flipping all of this back on you and saying, you really think these things? Yeah, you're going to have a good time at a feast. You're not going to regret drinking too much wine at all. Nothing bad's going to happen from that. It's really just laying it on thick with the sarcasm. And money is the answer to everything, right? There's an extent which, yes, you need money to do some things. But what a ridiculous thought to think that you're going to solve all the problems of the world with just handing out dough, you know? There's a pandemic. Everybody gets $10,000. You get it. It's going to solve everything. It's like no one's sick, no one's dying. Look at me and my politically charged statements. Okay. Verse 20, it does bring it back to a more serious tone. But don't curse the king. And then it makes a almost like a fantasy statement to say a bird's going to carry the words that you say in your bedroom. That king. Nah, a raven saw you outside your window, went back to the king and told him. And now you're locked up somewhere. It's really not about being overheard. What is this whole thing of don't curse the king? We've heard statements about not cursing people in the Bible before, right? What's the reasoning? Here's a fun one. When the president's not someone you like, why should you still pray for him?
Hopefully he'll get to where you like him.
No, I don't think that's going to happen. When they start out that way, there's not like a shift in tone. Ah, I see, you've been a wonderful person. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying is it's the way you thought about somebody who is in charge is always going to be that. Like, I have managers that I haven't worked for since I was 16 that I still think of that person as a knucklehead. You know what I mean? It's like, why were they ever in charge? Like, I was 16 and I could have done a better job than a 40-year-old. That doesn't make sense. I was washing cars at 16. So why shouldn't you curse them? Why is this prohibition?
It makes you down, makes you bitter, makes you, you know.
Yeah.
Makes you like the person you don't like.
Yeah, I've heard it said, and I really like this. Just as a reason not to, is a bitterness is drinking poison and waiting for someone else to die. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. It's just. Yeah, it is this understanding that, yeah, this fool is going to destroy themselves, but wouldn't it be great if they did find wisdom, you know?
The problem is they're going to destroy themselves and the whole country.
Yeah, well, and that's what makes it so severe that, I think this is probably one of the most clear things about the day and age in which we live. The second that you make your stance against something very publicly known to your friends or family, they'll stop talking to you about it if they disagree with you. You know, the reason why you don't bring up religion or politics at Thanksgiving dinner is because they want to have dinner. They still want to live their life and not have to deal with you, you know. And so somehow we still have to have these conversations about this person who's in charge, who's a fool. They care nothing about wisdom or properly doing things in a way that would be beneficial for everyone. They are foolhardy. They're full of themselves. But if I curse them in front of you or give the impression that I hate that person, right? I just wish God would strike them with lightning. The other people stop listening and stop having the conversation.
Why she don't let me wear shoes in the house because I keep throwing them at the TV.
I understand that. Yeah. The TV doesn't know if you broke it. Just saying, yeah. Right. Yeah, it's still on other in other places.
You can do it on purpose to get another one.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Let me Yeah, we do have some time. I just don't want to get into it because it's again one entire thought in chapter 11. I don't want to get into it. I can't do it. Sorry, I have chapter 11 in mind, but I connect 11 to 12 far more than I do 10 to 11. I guess where it might be well to end this whole conversation is to think about Jesus' commendation to not curse or hate your enemies. What does he say again, Jesus, when it comes to our enemies? Yeah, because I think this is what we do. We make someone who's in charge who shouldn't be in charge, and we say, that's our enemy. And what it does is it leads to cursing and all kind of violent thoughts, even if it doesn't come out in our speech or even our attitude. We really rein it in and keep it in. That's this idea of the birds of the sky might carry it away. Like, that's not going to happen, but it's destroying you. And if you can't, forgive your debtors, the way that God has forgiven you, that's kind of the whole point of Jesus's prayer that he teaches in Matthew 6, right? How in the world could I expect God to forgive me if I'm not going to forgive these people who even from afar are ruining my life, you know? Can't curse them. Ask for God's blessing. Ask for God to intervene. And another word on this, pray for your enemies. And don't pray with the doubt, well, God's never going to change them, but I'm supposed to pray for them. It's this real trust that God can change you. So don't you think he could change somebody else? It's a good little exercise when you can't figure out, when you can't imagine somebody else as a Christian, you have to take the second and say, let me imagine, what would I have been if God didn't find me? Where would I be at this point in my life if God didn't intervene when he did? I was saved at 6 years old, you know. There's a lot of decisions I would have made differently. And I'm sure you can do the same for yourself. Anything with that you want to pursue? We've talked about a lot of matters today. But anything you want to come back to?
There's also justice thrown in there. If we didn't have justice, we wouldn't have jails.
Oh, yeah.
Or courts or anything like that. Mm-hmm.
We'd all just get along.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let me close this in prayer. Father, we love you, and we thank you that you have come to us and given us the wisdom that leads us to Jesus Christ, to see our lack in life, our own foolish hearts and how they would lead us astray. And we thank you for the way that you've given us Jesus. And even if we mess this thing up and we mix in folly from time to time, that you will lead us back on the way that we're meant to go, that we would find life more abundant and free and not wait for eternity to have it in full. We thank you for all of these things in Jesus' name. Amen.